then the third comment that Steve had was regarding page 23, third party enforcer paragraph. Steve makes a comment. It is my understanding that this section prohibits the holder from bringing an action against the grantor for acts by a third party. And I'm assuming this third party would be an, like a violation action by something other than the third party enforcer. But does allow a holder to bring action against the third party itself. The third party enforcer paragraph does exactly what the DOT wants it to do. There's a third party enforcer named, and they're available to ensure that the holder is complying with the CE. And the holder can bring action on any unauthorized third party action. Okay, that's what we're after. And I'm not really sure what Steve's concerns are about this, but I guess I'd ask the woman to kind of weigh in. Is there, do you see any problems with that?
Well, I'll make 2 points. One, my general counsel hasn't seen Steve's comments. They came on it on 2 days when she's not in the office. So I haven't had a chance to have us react to these. Two, we had made a number of changes to this paragraph already so that it matched Maine Coast Carriage Trust's usual language in this section, and we were comfortable with it. But again, Karen has not been able to see what Steve's points are, so I'm going to have to get back to you. I wish they'd come over. There you go.
Okay, so any comments from Scott, do you understand what Steve's driving at there with that comment? Not quite sure. Because Legal and I were both sitting there kind of wondering, what is his concern?
I think this comes back to a general concern about who takes care of a circumstance where, and I'm going to call it, since we already have a third party enforcer, I'm going to call it an other party violation. And if you have an other party violation, that is, it could be John Q. Public, who decides they want to cut some oak trees down there for the great canoe logs that they have, and goes in some night and cuts some oak trees, that's an other party violation. Okay, the question then comes, what set of instances or actions occur at that time to enforce against this, and who does it? Okay, my understanding is, now I'm not going to catch, I'm going to ask Sione. Okay, there's a scenario.
You love putting me on the hot
seat. I'm afraid that if I speculate, if I give my analysis of the amount of the entire, because we have easements in one form and your easements are slightly different. So I think it'd be better for you to. What happens then? There you are with the logger.
Yep.
What happens?
We've dealt with this a number of times. What happens is still that who we deal with in this case is still the grantor, possibly a land management entity. But we go to DOT, who owns this land, and say, hey, this guy ran out and cut some oak trees. We need to work with you to figure this out. However, we're going to work to do this. This is an area that needs to be replanted. We're going to make you do that. You want to go run after them and tell them, you know, this is the problem that you cut our oak trees. That's your deal. But you need to work with us to fix this area or deal with the problem. That's how it works.
In that situation, though, it's clearly a theft. And it could be enforced, and the court would order restitution. It requested by the owner of the vehicle.
But the owner always keeps those rights. You know, and that's why we need to go back to the owner.
Right.
Right.
But if the DOT is a grantor, everything is going to come back to DOD from an enforcement perspective.
that's the court of last resort enforcement in this instance, this conservation
easement. Okay. Helping a little bit here, who's the first line
of enforcement?
Yeah, I mean, look, could you pick an example that isn't criminal? I mean, no, I'm only thinking in terms of you've got a whole different system of law. But let's say you have made an agreement with someone, and someone is going to be the licensee, for lack of a better word,
who runs the building.
Okay, and they don't do exactly what this agreement says. But there's, their activities are contrary to what's allowed here, and presumably contrary to their contract, but it isn't criminal.
Well, the only thing is just about every type of violation is going to have the potential of criminal action, because every type of violation is going to at least be a trespass of some sort.
No, one potential violation could be
of the easement.
Of the easement, I
think. Yes, of the easement. I can't think of a single type of violation that would at least have the minimal criminal aspect of unduly trespass.
Yeah, but in that case, you have given the person by contract the right to be there, so you don't have the protection of trespass. You're just saying that if you agree, I'm trying to give you an example. The two of you agree that there's going to be a shed, and the shed is going to be 5 feet by 5 feet by 10 feet high. And what the guy builds is 25 feet by 25 feet by 40 feet high. Who enforces the agreement here? I mean, ultimately, it's the DOT or the DEP, but just from a practical standpoint.
Let me run through the scenario, and it's a whole different one. So, that's right. So, you're asking if NDOT contracts with someone to be this land management entity, you call them an easement, to go and build one of the buildings on the land in the right area, the building and maintenance, education and maintenance center area, and they build a building that is larger than the allowed footprint.
Different.
Okay, taller, bigger, something that we need to enforce. Here's what generally happens depending on the scale of the problem. It's still up to us to be the policemen of this aspect. We will need to go in, and our first contact is always the landowner, the DOT, and say, okay, guys, there's a building that is not conforming here. We need to figure out how and why, what to do about it, and DOT may say, well, this was our contract with the land management, and they did it, we need to deal with them. In which case, the rules go strengthen. So, as far as actual action on the ground, it's still DOT or the land management, but we are the policemen behind the words that we put on the side.
And as a practice, and as the owner, I would assume too that you would have no authority in those of the police or courts or
you're still
whatever.
The owner.
We're still the owner. As a practical matter, I came to a comfort point on improvements to the property from the standpoint that before we would sign off on somebody building a building up there, they would have to show the wherewithal and the ability to undertake it. If that may involve a surety bond or other means to ensure that they paid the wrong parking lot area, or go into a wetland, or do other things that the financial wherewithal would be there to correct it, and through the inspection process. I think the more interesting one though is what you brought up about, or something we brought up about the trees. Because if somebody goes out into an impacted area and cuts trees, sets the forest on fire, or arson, or whatever, that's more things that are hard to control.
It is, but they happen, and it's still a matter of figuring out what the landowner kind of do. We always have to go back to the landowner. Let me add one more step to Bob's scenario, because one of your questions is regarding the DEP and third-party holders. Let's say we for some reason, are not paying attention to a building being figured out there, or maybe we don't even exist anymore at that point, or for some reason there's not enforcement going on. DPP has rights to get backup tools. So they can come in and say, okay, DOT, the DPP is still in place, we're a backup holder. They have, you know, enforcement rights behind us.
Okay, I want to clarify one thing, because there's two different kinds of prospective violations. Bob's violation of the building is not an other party violation.
No.
It's a named entity. It's either the manager, the grant court or the management entity. And that's not what Steve's asking about. Steve's asking about two other party violations. And my comment on the criminal side is it applies to the other party violators, but not necessarily the management entity. They just may be doing something wrong, but they're not necessarily criminal.
Isn't part of this discussion also, you know, we'll get into this a little bit more about when we talk about the advisory group? Because there's going to be a certain amount of oversight into planning that kind of thing. Not necessarily enforcement, but planning in terms of building, you know, building and growth and building structure. So, you know, it's not like the grantee, but whoever's using the building out there, they're not going to be able to go out there and build a building that's going to happen just without any approval.
Well, yes, theoretically that's right. The reality that I think most of my trustees run into is don't happen. You know, you'll look at the plans, they're within conformance, the builders, you think, understand that, and then you walk out and the building's in the wrong place, or it's too big, or, you know, that happens. And then I think their question is, so in that kind of situation, what is our job?
Right.
That's, you know, and I can explain that.